We want to thank our sponsor, Great Western Bank, a proud supporter of the Wildcast podcast. At Great Western Bank, they focus on serving family-owned businesses and their overall financial needs. Whether your company needs increased working capital, equipment or SBA financing, purchasing or renovating a building or construction financing, Great Western Bank has the expertise to work through your specific financial needs. Visit the Great Western Bank branch on Campbell between Glen and Fort Lowell or call 520-325-1135 to talk to any of the business bankers about your specific needs. Member FDIC.
From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hey, what's up? Welcome to another episode of the Wildcast podcast. Justin Spears here with Michael Lev and Alec White. And as always, every Monday, we come down to the McHale Center Dungeons, or I should say McHale Center Studio. What was the official name that we gave it last week?
The McHale Center Media Room, or McHale Media Center.
Okay, McHale Media Center. And we're here to talk about Halloween candy. No, I'm just kidding. We're talking about Arizona Wildcats football and the latest news that came out with defensive coordinator Marcel Yates. Arizona decided to move away from Yates after three-plus seasons at the helm. He's now in his fourth season. And we all wondered why Kevin Sumlin made the decision now. And this wasn't an easy decision for Kevin Sumlin because the two have known each other for a long time, going back to the days at Texas A&M. So it wasn't an easy decision for Kevin Sumlin, but he said the reason why he made this decision now was based off of the last three games, giving up 133 points to Washington, USC, and most recently Stanford. So he said that was a big reason why, and you know, he wanted to give the players the best chance to win. Where do you guys stand after hearing Kevin Sumlin's press conference?
Yeah, I mean, he laid it out pretty clearly. You know, this is about giving, as you mentioned, the team the best chance to win right now. This isn't about next year. It isn't about the next month. It's about this week. And I feel like he could sense that the season was slipping away, which, I mean, it clearly was or is. You know, they were 4-1. Now they're 4-4. I felt like Stanford was a game that they really could have won, maybe even should have won, just based on the state of the two programs. And then the defense came out in the first half and was just, like, invisible. I mean, they were as bad as you could be. I mean, Stanford eclipsed its season average in scoring, almost equaled its season average in yardage, but in the first half.
I was going to say, but most of those points came in the first half. They only gave ten in the second half.
It still counts as part of the game,
yeah.
Justin.
I mean, I know, yeah, you're right.
Here's the difference between what happened against Stanford and what happened against Washington and USC, okay? Defense kept you in the game for a long time in those two contests when it had short fields and turnovers and all this bad stuff happening, and then kind of collapsed at the end, you know, when it was pretty much too late. You know, there's only so much you can do. The dam kind of broke. Here, this all happened in the first half when the offense was actually moving the ball and giving you a chance, and there was no pass rush. Coverage was bad on the back end. Stanford was just kind of doing whatever it wanted, and I think that, you know, this was a decision that he maybe was going to make after the year was done anyway, and he decided that he had seen enough, and that the first half of that game was kind of the last straw. This way, you can kind of get ahead of the curve a little bit. You can give Chuck Cecil a chance, see what he can do over this next month or so. You've got the early signing period, which he said was not relevant to this whole situation, but it is because you would like to get that situation settled as soon as you can, you know, with you know, the signing period coming up in, you know, mid to late December. I think all of those things are factors, but I think the biggest factor was that first half against Stanford. It was just, I don't know, I was kind of encouraged by the defense's performance in a weird way after the previous two games, and then it all kind of went out the window.
Yeah. Alec, even though you're a rookie at the Star, you've been covering this team over the last few years now. You've been around Marcel Yates during his entire career at Arizona. Where do you stand on the firing of Yates?
For me, it's the last
really the last year. You don't even have to look at, you know, this season, but the last, you know, when someone took over this, you know, last year, going in this year, we were just kind of waiting for, okay, when, who's going to get the hammer first? Is it going to be Noah Mazzone? Is it going to be Marcel Yates? Who's, because at different points throughout each season, the offense has been sporadic and disappointing. The defense has been largely disappointing the last two seasons. So I think we're just waiting for something to happen. And to Lev's point about the early signing period, you've got Oregon State coming up at home. Then you got a bye week. It just kind of makes sense that now's the time. You're trying to save the season, 4-4. You got to get two wins to reach a bowl game. And at this current rate that they were traveling on, losing three in a row, the defense, especially against Stanford, not looking good. Missing two straight bowl games with Kevin Sumlin as your head coach, and when you're supposed to, with Khalil Tate, and when you're supposed to be winning 7-8 games a year, it's not a good look. So you got to get some type of spark, even if it's just temporary, until you find a full-on replacement. If Cecil's not the guy, you got to make some type of move now.
Yeah. I guess we should have mentioned this at the start of the podcast. Chuck Cecil is taking over as interim defensive coordinator. Yeah. But to talk about, you know, what Alex said about, you know, recruiting, you know, they got Oregon State and then the bye week. Bye weeks are the biggest time for recruiting during the season because you're able to fly out to all these different parts of the country rather than wherever you're at. You know,
sometimes by plane, sometimes by helicopter.
But, you know, I think Kevin Sumlin said something pretty cool in that press conference. For one, he's the head coach.
Yep.
He's got a hand on all the recruits. He talks to every single recruit that they offer. We were in LA a couple weeks ago, and I had a chance to talk to KJ Crump. His name is spelled K-H-A-R-Y. You think it's Kerry, but it's pronounced Kyrie.
And you call him KJ because you guys are so close.
Well, he also goes by KJ as well. But, you know, Kyrie or KJ, I asked him about, you know, the coaching staff, and he really loved Marcel Yates, John Rushing, two guys that are no longer with the program. How is that going to affect his decision? Well, he also loves Kevin Sumlin as well. He, you know, raved about Kevin Sumlin and what he's done as a head coach and also, you know, sending guys to the NFL. So, you know, Kevin Sumlin, I think his job right now over the next couple of weeks is, you know, to reach out to all the 2020 commits and say, hey, even though your primary recruiter, if, you know, if Marcel Yates recruited them, if you're considering your primary recruiter is gone, we still are pressing on. We still want you to be a part of this class, and we still think the world of you. And, you know, whoever they get, I mean, they're going to have their work cut out for them. I mean, they're going to have to, you know, make sure that these recruits stay while also adding some recruits. Because you look up the road in Phoenix, they got a guy who's a defensive end, goes by the name of Jason Harris, who is a priority for Arizona. I know Sean Harris, his dad being a former Wildcat, helps. His brother being on the team helps. But
his mom is also a former Wildcat.
Played basketball here at the U of A. So, you know, they have that going for them. But, you know, he really loves Texas A&M right now. Who are you going to bring in that can attract a big-time prospect like Jason Harris to come over and stay in Arizona? That's a priority for Arizona.
You know, when Alec was talking about we were waiting for something to happen, I thought he was going to say something else. This is what I was thinking when he was saying that. Like, I was waiting for the breakthrough to happen for this defense because, you know, in year one, none of Marcel's players, basically, inheriting a, you know, coming off what? Is that 2016 was his first season? Correct? That was the year they went 3-9. That was just kind of a disastrous year all around. Tons of injuries. You really couldn't judge him off of that. 2017, a lot of the top defensive players were freshmen, part of that 2017 class. Colin Schooler, Tony Fields, Scotty Young, these types of guys. So a really young unit, sort of, okay, they're not quite there yet developmentally, okay? Then last year, we kind of thought, okay, no more excuses. This is the year where it has to happen, and it didn't really happen. So I think, you know, the timeline to me was sort of shifted because of that. You know, like, last year was supposed to be the breakthrough. And then this year, okay, there's really no more excuses, and they still didn't have the breakthrough.
Because how much do they talk about depth in the offseason?
Oh, yeah.
All the time.
I know Kevin Sumlin said that he didn't look at the fact. Yeah, I think you asked him. about
for him,
him being here for four years, and that wasn't relevant to him. But I think when you look at the big picture of things, that it is relevant, that they have not made enough progress over the course of the 4 years that he's been here.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why they had to make the change. I think the stat I quoted was they haven't finished higher than ninth in the league in points allowed or total defense over that time. And if and in order for them to win, I thought this year they only have to be in the fifth or sixth range, because we thought the offense was going to be pretty good, and that's a whole another topic for us to get to. Do we want to speculate about what could happen here in the future, or do we want to give Chuck Cecil a shot? Do we want to throw out some names, or do you want to?
Man, well,
what do you think?
I think Chuck Cecil is a great option. If he shows potential, if the defense really rallies, you know, over the next four games, you got to look at a guy like Chuck Cecil, because he's got NFL experience, not only as a player, but as a coach. He coached the Titans. He coached the Rams. So, you know, he's got a lot of expertise. And you know what? Am I the crazy one here for thinking that I kind of expected this to happen? Not Marcel Yates getting fired, but Chuck Cecil
playing a bigger role.
Eventually getting to a bigger role with this Arizona defense, because he was hired as an analyst a few years ago. And that when at that time, I said, that's not a job for Chuck Cecil for too long. You know, he's destined for bigger things. He's the next guy in line. Now he has his chance. Hank Hobson, another Wildcat who played under Mike Stoops and Rich Rodriguez, he's now coaching linebackers. Kevin Sumlin said, man, imagine waking up on a Sunday morning and becoming a full-time Division I college football head coach. Assistant coach. But, you know, I want to give Chuck Cecil a chance. You know, let him show what he can do over these next four games. And if he's not the guy, then you start looking at, you know, interesting names. Like one guy up the road who's coaching linebackers and is one hell of a recruiter who goes by the name of Antonio Pierce. There is no reason why a former Arizona Wildcat should be coaching up in Tempe.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're going to break out the checkbook for Antonio Pierce. I'm sure they're going to, you know, give him whatever he wants. And that's huge for Arizona, because he's a big-time recruiter. He's originally from Compton. He coached at Long Beach Poly, which is a SoCal powerhouse. And, you know, you can develop that pipeline right here in Tucson.
Well, I think it has to be a promotion if you're going to go that route. You have to make him the defensive coordinator.
Oh, not linebacker.
He's
linebackers coach and recruiting coordinator at the moment. What I've heard about him is he's a great motivator, great speaker, rah-rah guy, great recruiter. Whether he has the X's and O's, you know, acumen/experience to really scheme things up, I think remains to be seen. You know, you could also have a setup where you have co-defensive coordinators, and one of them is the run game coordinator and another one is the pass game coordinator. You know, maybe Demetrius Martin becomes the DP, the cornerback coach / you know, passing game coordinator. There's a lot of different ways you can do it. Regarding Chuck Cecil, obviously he has the NFL resume, okay? He has Arizona Wildcat roots like no other. I mean, one of the all-time, probably top five best players in program history.
Yeah,
he's got the most iconic play.
Maybe the best play. I would agree with you. I think that play over the leap leap by the lake. I guess the question I have though is recruiting. You know, does he want to do that? Is he willing to do that? Because that's a huge part of this job. It's not something he has any experience with, because you don't do that in the NFL. You could argue that Herm Edwards didn't have any of that experience, or a lot of the sort of NFL people that he brought in, but Antonio Pierce was at a high school, you know, coaching at a high school before he came here, so he's got a lot of those connections. That would be my question with Chuck, because I have no doubt from a schematic standpoint, football acumen, just name recognition, he's got all of those things. But I remember when Kevin was putting the staff together, he wanted guys who could do everything, and that everything includes recruiting. So I think that's a really important piece of the puzzle here.
What I want to add on about Cecil is that isn't – as an analyst, you can't have – you're not able to have contact with, like, the players. Like, you can't be around them, like, coaching, like, on the sidelines during game day.
They're allowed to watch film, have input. They can talk to the players. They're just not allowed to actually coach them on the field
at
practice. They're also on the sideline. I don't know if they're on the headsets or not. But there are just limitations to what you can do. There are no limitations to how many of those you can have. If you look at the roles of Alabama or LSU, they've got a lot of analysts, you know, a lot of like big time people. I believe Mike Stoops, the former Arizona head coach, is an analyst at Alabama,
which is another
who also
name.
Has some ties to Kevin Sumlin from the Oklahoma days.
The list continues to grow.
And
you know what? One thing about Mike Stoops is that even though he was fired and it ended on bad terms, he loves Tucson. He comes back to Tucson every so often to play a round of 18.
Yeah, I walked 18 with him and Rich Rod a couple years ago for the Pro-Am for the Collar Guard Classic up at Omni Tucson National.
Yeah.
And he was couldn't have been more like gregarious and happy to be there. I mean, this is playing golf with his successor, basically, which shows you like
he loves Tucson.
How much he loves Tucson, or you know how much he loves
in
this place. And like we said, he has a connection to Kevin Sumlin, which is important. But you know, let's not go too far down the road.
Sure.
On like the whole list of names, we'll have a list out on Tucson.com. In the next couple days here with some possible defensive coordinator candidates, with Chuck Cecil being atop that list because he's the guy who's in that chair right now. He's going to, I think, be given every opportunity to show what he can do.
But for you both,
I want to
hear your opinion. What would it take for Cecil to retain the job? What would the defense have to show you or him to stay as DC?
Minimally, they have to win two of the last four games. And I need to see something different, because my take on where the defense is right now or where it's been the last few weeks, it just seems stagnant to me. Like, I'm not seeing a lot of variety of different looks. I'm not seeing a lot of exotic blitz packages. I mean, can you either of you tell me the last time you saw a cornerback blitz from Arizona? I don't think they've done one all year. Do you think Christian Roland Wallace would be good at blitzing?
Yeah.
Given how fast and strong he is, just for example, I feel like when I'm watching them, like I kind of know what's going to happen. Like they introduced this dime package the last couple weeks, which I really like. Four defensive ends, one linebacker. They bring Christian Young back in as the sixth defensive back. But I think every time they've done it, they've just rushed four and the defensive ends loop inside. And I know that that's coming. And don't you think the other teams maybe know that that's coming?
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not all on the scheme either. I'm very disappointed in some of the young pass rushers this year who just cannot seem to win one-on-one battles. It's, as Coach Sumlin is fond of saying, it is a combination of things. It's not just coaching. It's on the players, too. Like, the biggest problem I see with the defense, number one, above everything else, lack of a pass rush. They literally have the worst pass rush in all of Power 5, if you look at sack totals. Only three teams have less, and none of them are Power 5. They have 7 sacks in 8 games. And Kay, you were there on Saturday, Justin. KJ Costello, he's back there, he's making a sandwich.
Having a picnic. Like,
yeah. I mean, he could do it. Any quarterback would slice up your secondary if there's no pass rush. So that's one of the things I want to see, too. Is he going to be able to manufacture a pass rush or get the front four guys to get to the quarterback somehow, some way?
Which is crazy, because remember when Arizona won 3 straight and they were 4-1 and sitting atop of the Pac-12 South? We looked at what they were able to do defensively, and they were able to get the quarterbacks out of the pocket. You know, Alan Bowman, Texas Tech.
At least make them uncomfortable. Yeah.
Dorian Thompson-Robinson.
They injured Dorian Thompson-Robinson, and they also injured Alan Bowman. And then since then, you know, it just hasn't been there.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we overrated some of the players, if they're not being taught the right techniques, if they're not being put in the best positions to get to the quarterback. But that's where it all starts for me. You have to disrupt what the quarterback is doing, especially in this conference, because you know that you're going to get a lot of, you know, pretty good passing attacks, including this week with Jake Luton coming in, the Oregon State. Everyone sort of dismisses Oregon State, but they blew out UCLA, a UCLA team that beat the Stanford team, that just beat Arizona, and that just clobbered Arizona State. I know the score was close at the end, but you know, Oregon State is not to be taken lightly, especially offensively. So really interesting Saturday afternoon. Like, what is the defense going to look like? We're usually so focused on the other side of the ball with the quarterbacks and all that, but I feel like we're going to – shine the spotlight on the other matchup.
Yeah. Answering your question, Alec, I think ditto what Lev said. You have to establish a pass rush, because when you do that, when you have experienced defensive backs, guys like Jace Whitaker and Lorenzo Burns,
right.
How many plays have they made this year? At one point in time, Arizona led college football in interceptions.
Yeah.
And a big part of that is because of what you're able to do to the opposing team's quarterback. So developing a pass rush helps out Jace Whitaker, Lorenzo Burns. I'm unsure about Lorenzo Burns. I know he exited the game against Stanford, which made Jace Whitaker move back to the primary cornerback spot. But, you know, Arizona has the personnel, right? We've heard about...
We think.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
But we've heard about in the offseason was depth. I mean, injuries haven't plagued Arizona on the defensive side of the ball, so what's up right now?
Yeah.
I don't know.
They do have better depth on the defensive line, for sure. They have better depth at cornerback. Those defensive linemen are not necessarily producing the numbers, especially the edge guys. I hate to name names, but, I mean, J.B. Brown and Jalen Harris, I mean, we thought coming into the season, and they even said as much, like, they could combine for 20 sacks, and they're on pace for about 10. You know, that's a major disappointment. Kylan Wilborn flashed on the scene as a freshman, hasn't been the same player since. I mean, what's going on with the development of these edge rushers? I think they missed Fintan Connolly in that game. I know he played, but he was basically playing with one arm. There was one play where he tried to tackle a quarterback or running back or somebody and couldn't get him on the ground, and I'm like, this
just
is probably not
field.
A good idea.
Yeah.
Trayvon Mason, I think, has been a pleasant surprise, and I think he's going to be a really good player. And I've been really disappointed in the safety position this year. I mean, they're just not getting enough playmaking from that group. Guys are slow to react. Christian Young looked like he was coming on. Now he's kind of, you know, in and out of the lineup. Scotty Young doesn't seem like quite the same guy that he was before. I mean, Jarius Wallace, I thought, was their best safety against Stanford, a guy who kind of hadn't even been heard from. So there's a lot of problems over there. But to your question, Alec, you can look at the first eight games. You've got a set of stats that you can look at. Then you can look at the last four games, and you can compare the two. And you can use that as one criterium. And then another one is just how the interaction goes, how the communication is, Kevin Sumlin's feel for the situation.
Right.
You know, he'll be right there. He'll see how Chuck is operating, if he likes him or not. And then he'll make a call on that at the end of the season. You could also hire Chuck Cecil as your safeties coach / passing game coordinator and hire somebody else, like Antonio Pierce, as your linebackers coach / run game coordinator, and then maybe everybody's happy, you know?
Arizona fans just got goosebumps here. All right, so real quick, guys, since we only have a few minutes left here of the podcast, let's look back at Pac-12. Yep. And the schedule from this past weekend. By the way, Lev, Alec, and I, what?
Do you want to hit on just real quick before Pac-12, the 2QB system?
Oh, that's right. Man, I can't believe that's a footnote of what's been going on.
It is a thing. Sounds like it's going to continue. As I tweeted during the game, I don't hate it because they're so different. You know, it's like having a flamethrower start the game for you and then bringing in soft-tossing, like, lefty as a changeup. And it just throws the batters off, you know what I mean? Not that Grant Cannell is a soft-tosser. I mean, we saw tremendous, I would say, velocity and accuracy on that touchdown pass to Jalen Johnson in the back of the end zone. But very different styles of quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. Running threat versus, and we've talked about it many times, the sort of the point guard analogy where Khalil is Russell Westbrook. And I said that Grant Cannell is kind of like Lonzo Ball. You know, Russell Westbrook's got a high usage rate. He's going to hold the ball a lot. He's going to do crazy athletic things. And Grant Cannell is going to distribute the ball. The tricky part is, how do you manage that during the game based on how the game is going and how the guys are going? I just think it's easier said than done. It's harder than Kevin Sumlin made it out to be when he was talking about it today.
Well, and the cool thing about Grant Cannell and his experience this past weekend, he wasn't thrown in the game when Arizona was down by three touchdowns.
Yeah, good point.
You know,
he
was thrown in on the third drive when Arizona trailed.
That was planned too. Yeah.
Was it 7-3 at that point, or was it still 3-0?
It was 7-3.
It was 7-3, because I know Khalil Tate on the second possession, or the second offensive drive, He went 3 and out. And a part of me thinks, well, if Khalil Tate drives you down the field and scores again, whether it's a field goal or whether it's a touchdown, wouldn't you keep him in the game at that point? But Kevin Sumlin said
– yeah, third series.
No, third series, yep. It was Gunnell's. So I don't know. It should be interesting to see if they keep it the same, if Grant Gunnell's going to come in, you know, every three series.
How do you do that in the second half? That's when it becomes trickier.
That's where I think they made a couple missteps against Stanford, because Tate came in that second half, got him going on a touchdown drive to open second half, and then Gunnell comes in, you know, that drive goes backwards. They had that fumble that he recovered, and then all of a sudden Tate comes in, and Tate's ineffective. It kind of threw the rhythm off, especially in the fourth quarter.
Yeah. Man, two quarterbacks.
Yeah, just when you thought things were kind of getting a little boring around here.
Saturday's going to be fun.
Really not. Interesting stuff.
All right, let's talk some Pac-12 football. All right, so you mentioned ASU getting blasted by UCLA at the Rose Bowl.
The final score was 42-32, but they scored the last 22 points in garbage time, which means what, that it was 42-10? Growing pains for young quarterback, young team. They have a lot of – that's a very young ASU roster. I would not be surprised if they beat USC on, November 9th. I could see that happening.
It's at home.
You know, I could totally see that happening. And, hey, signs of life for Chip Kelly. Getting Joshua Kelly back in the fold, I think a very big deal for that team. He's just one of those – physical runners that you just like. If you're a cornerback, you don't want to see Joshua Kelly coming around the corner.
He's gonna be playing on Sundays.
You think?
For sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
He was at UC Davis.
Really?
Before coming to UCLA. How about that?
What's UC Davis' mascot?
Oh man.
Is it the Stampede or Mustang or something like that?
Putting
it's
me
a
on
horse.
The spot.
Ooh, you know what?
Ryan
Finley
Mustang.
Would know this. The Mustang?
I think.
All right.
Ryan Finley would know this. He had 34 carries for 164 yards and 4 touchdowns.
Wow.
In that game, which is kind of like what he did to USC at the end of last year, too. So, hey, not dead yet.
Just like that. They have a winning record in the Pac-12.
How about that?
Oh, my goodness.
What?
3-2 in the
UCLA,
conference.
Out of all the teams.
Did you guys watch any of USC Colorado?
Friday night?
A little bit. Not too much.
Yeah, impressive. You know, gritty. I thought gritty performance for the Trojans coming off a ton of injuries against Arizona. A short week, have it go on the road, kind of a desperate Colorado team, and they found a way to pull it off. And Michael Pittman Jr. was kind of the star of that game, and Keaton Slovis obviously got him the ball. But, you know, I feel like with those playmakers that they have, that they're not out of any game. Those three receivers, I mean, they're just dynamite.
What about the thriller in Eugene?
Oregon, Washington State.
Pac-12 after dark. Oregon Wazoo, because I mean I would like to talk about Cal Utah, but the score kind of says it all.
Can wait, 35-0. Can I get a little bit of credit for calling the shutout?
For what? Oh, you called the shutout? Okay,
we were sitting right next to me. I called. I think I said 24-0, so I was a little bit off, but I did call a shutout. And they gave up 85 yards in the whole game, so
that's crazy.
It's crazy.
But yeah, Oregon Washington State, that was a fun game to watch.
Yeah, we thought that it might be a close game because I thought there was a little bit of a letdown factor coming off that big road win at Washington. I also think Washington State's just a tough team to play. It's sort of like the inverse of playing an option team. So because they're just so extreme. I mean, they pass, 80% of the time? No one else does that, really. They're going to move the ball. Anthony Gordon passed for 406 yards.
50
in
attempts.
This game, 50 attempts. But C.J. Verdell was a beast in that game.
Yeah.
My goodness.
And he's only – isn't he a freshman too? Or he's an underclassman
for
sure.
No, I think he's a redshirt sophomore.
But he's still a young player that will be in the Pac-12 for the next couple years.
If I told you that he was only 5'9", 210, wouldn't you think he's 240 pounds the way he was running?
Yeah, he's like a bowling ball.
In that game? Oh, my God. He was incredible. He had – he had 257 yards rushing in that game and 3 touchdowns on 23 carries. Also 4 for 56 receiving. So,
and also give props to Justin Herbert too.
Yeah,
because was it a minute left?
Had the Washington State scored, took
absolutely
the lead by one.
Mm-hmm. He
seven
calm
plays,
and cool.
53 yards.
Boom, the one thing I want to add about this whole deal is that everyone after the game was like, oh, man, this is a great win for Oregon. Oregon's the last chance for the Pac-12 in the CFP. And I tweeted out like one of those, hey, Utah, over here. We're still viable. We're still in this thing. It's not just Oregon. Utah is in it. No question about it. And, you know, it might come down to the Pac-12 championship game. That would be the best scenario for the conference, for sure, awesome. For both of them to win out. And then the winner of that game, you know, hopefully gets into the CFP.
It helps when you consider Oklahoma lost.
Yep.
Wisconsin's done for.
Yep. But somebody else lost. Notre Dame. Second loss.
Yep.
That helps too. We've talked about all year how you need help if you're the Pac-12 and you have a loss. So they got a little help.
All right, guys. Well, we have a lot more to talk about in the next or the upcoming days, I should say. We have our live podcast at Frog and Firkin coming
on Thursday.
So make sure you come hang out with us and subscribe to this podcast. We also have Arizona basketball starting this week as well, Friday night.
It's getting busy.
Against Chico State exhibition game.
You guys do.
Yeah. It's starting to get to that time of year here for the Arizona Daily Star. So also, with all this content, I mean, yeah, you can subscribe to the Arizona Daily Star, but you can get all this content on the Arizona Wildcats on the Wildcaster app. It's good stuff right there.
Set your push notification alerts. You won't miss a beat.
Yeah, we're sending out push notifications. We have videos. Alec is doing a tremendous job helping us out with the digital content. So if you're an Arizona Wildcat fan, you will love the Wildcaster app. Download it. It's free, and it's available on the App Store and Google Play. All right. We'll see you later on this weekend. For Lev, for Alec, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening.
We want to thank our sponsor, Great Western Bank, a proud supporter of the Wildcast podcast. At Great Western Bank, they focus on serving family-owned businesses and their overall financial needs. Whether your company needs increased working capital, equipment or SBA financing, purchasing or renovating a building or construction financing, Great Western Bank has the expertise to work through your specific financial needs. Visit the Great Western Bank branch on Campbell between Glen and Fort Lowell or call 520-325-1135 to talk to any of the business bankers about your specific needs. Member FDIC.